Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, Radio Havana Cuba, France 24, and NHK World Radio Japan. We will begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. The increased possibility of a Trump presidency has made European leaders and citizens anxious. How will transatlantic policy be shaped if the U.S. makes America first threats to NATO nations an official strategy? South Africa has made a new application to the International Court of Justice, asking it to prevent famine in the Gaza Strip. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
With another set of Trump primary victories, the likelihood of a second Donald Trump presidency looms large. That's made European leaders nervous and vigilant. The possibility of a return to an America First policy in Washington and even the lack of support for NATO has forced officials on the continent to prep for a future without their most powerful ally.
When he was previously president of the United States, Donald Trump described the European Union as a foe and threatened to make Europeans pay for U.S. protection. Now his America First policy could once again reshape transatlantic relations.
For many European politicians, the possibility of Donald Trump's return to the White House is a nightmare scenario, even though they don't like to speak about it in front of a camera.
Surely you're not inviting me to interfere in the internal affairs of our biggest ally.
It's the people in America who have the right to choose their president.
In private, however, one diplomat described the atmosphere to us as a mixture of desperation and resignation. And it seems pretty clear that behind closed doors, officials in European capitals are working on contingency plans should there be a second Donald Trump presidency.
I'm sure that there are contingency plans. They're not going to wait until the last moment. The advantage that they have is Trump is not anymore, unlike what was the case in 2016, 2017, is not an unknown person anymore.
During his first term in office, Trump imposed tariffs on trade with EU members. He pulled out of the Paris Climate Agreement, and in what was the biggest shock, he repeatedly questioned the US commitment to the NATO alliance. Now he's delivering the same messages on the campaign trail.
One of the presidents of a big country stood up and said, "Well, sir, if we don't pay and we're attacked by Russia, will you protect us?" I said, "No, I would not protect you. In fact, I would encourage them to do whatever the hell they want. You got to pay."
So could a second Trump presidency mean the end of NATO?
It's not just about whether the United States is in or out. I mean, almost certainly the United States would stay in. But there are levels of being in. And other allies on occasion have sought lower levels of involvement with NATO, withdrawing from the Integrated Military Command, for example, or simply focusing on areas outside of the European security orbit, which would leave Europe in a position of having to sort of somehow fill that gap.
Could Europe fill that gap? Not in the short term. Experts say NATO without the US would be weak. Europe's nuclear deterrence without American nuclear weapons, inconceivable, at least for now. And supporting Ukraine without money and arms from Washington would be much more difficult. So what can EU leaders do?
No matter what will happen in US, Europe has to be able to do more on our own and in cooperation with our allies.
This is a wake-up call for everybody in Europe to do more for European own defense.
Doing more for European security could help. but it will take time for countries to be able to do that. A European Union army first discussed decades ago is still a distant endeavor. And in the meantime?
If one looks at the experience of the Trump administration that we had, clearly he views the world not just through nation states, but through individual leaderships, individual leaders, I can say. Not so much alliances, not so much agreements, sometimes not even states, but individuals. And so those individual relationships matter.
Building relationships, stepping up on defense, Europeans are bracing for Trump 2.0. And they know that a new phase in the transatlantic relationship might be looming anyway, regardless of who will win the race to the White House.
And we got more on how European leaders are looking at these elections. Is it hope for the best, prepare for the worst? We put that to Brussels Bureau Chief Alexandra von Naumann, who you saw there in that report.
Well, Sarah, I think that describes the best mood in most European capitals, with only few exemptions. We are here on assignment in Poland, and the Polish President Andrzej Duda, when he was asked about Donald Trump's claim he, if reelected, could end the war in Ukraine in just 24 hours, he said, well, Donald Trump has always kept his words to me. So that was quite a statement, but his prime minister was much more critical, as are most European leaders who are watching very closely what is happening in the U.S. They are hoping for a second Biden presidency because they know that Joe Biden really values the transatlantic relationship. But they are also reaching out to people who could be on a potential Donald Trump team should he be elected again, because of course they want to learn what is campaign talk and what could be then real policy or real policies.
What possible effect could the outcome of the election have on Europe?
It depends whether you are an optimist or a pessimist. According to one think tank, under Donald Trump, the U.S. would abandon climate action, trade wars would harden, and NATO would be at best dormant. And I think this is the biggest problem that the Europeans are worried about, that Donald Trump, if reelected, would pull out or at least weaken NATO. And this is, of course, a key question for the European, because it is about their security, and there are different scenarios, and the Europeans are really worried that the return of America First policy could mean Europe on its own, as the Belgian Prime Minister De Croo put it, talking to his lawmakers.
What are the steps that the EU could take now to enhance and protect their own position in the world?
Well, I think that the Europeans are now talking a lot about what they can do, that they need to do more for their own defense. Some of the European allies, members of NATO, have already increased their defense spending. Yesterday, the European Commission announced a new initiative for a European defense industrial strategy. So they want to invest more money to produce more weapons. But all of that, of course, needs time, and as for now, I would say the Europeans are very carefully watching what is happening in the
DW's US. Alexandra von Naumann joining us. Thank you so much, Alexandra. We appreciate it.
South Africa has made a new application to the International Court of Justice, or the ICJ, asking it to prevent famine in the Gaza Strip. South Africa is seeking an emergency order to compel Israel to allow more aid into the territory, warning that Palestinians in Gaza are facing starvation. Israel has launched an offensive in Gaza to root out Hamas militants following the terror attacks of October the 7th. South Africa has urged the court to order all parties to cease hostilities and release all hostages and detainees.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube and their channels called DW News and DW Documentary, as well as most podcast sites. Next, Radio Havana, Cuba. The government in the Gaza Strip has dismissed the U.S. decision to airdrop humanitarian aid, saying it is a theatrical and ineffective move. The Geneva-based European Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor has confirmed that Israeli tanks have deliberately run over dozens of Palestinians in separate incidents. Israeli forces bombed a second aid truck last Sunday. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The government in the Gaza Strip has dismissed a decision by the United States to airdrop humanitarian aid into the besieged territory, saying the theatrical and ineffective move cannot offset Israeli restrictions on the transfer of food into Gaza via land crossings. Quote, "The policy of airdropping humanitarian aid and preventing the delivery of aid through border crossings is, in fact, part of an evasive strategy that does not address the core issue and resorts to theatrical and ineffective solutions instead," the government media office in Gaza said in a statement on Sunday. The statement said the aid airdrop by the U.S. is in line with the occupying Israeli regime's policy of internationally starving the Palestinians, adding that it is also meant to kill time and to prolong the hunger crisis in Gaza to inflict as much damage as possible upon the population in the Strip. The Israeli aggression on Gaza has killed at least 30,410 people, most of them children and women, and wounded another 71,700 since it started in early October. The European Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor has confirmed that Israeli tanks deliberately run over dozens of Palestinians in separate incidents across the besieged Strip. The Geneva-based organization on Sunday revealed disturbing incidents of Israeli tanks running over Palestinians. It documented the Israeli army killing a Palestinian man who had been deliberately run over in the Zaytun neighborhood in Gaza on February 29th. The man is believed to have been in Israeli custody and his hands were tied with plastic handcuffs when he was run over. Images of the body following the incident were shared online by the human rights group. They showed the victim's body crushed to the extent he was no longer identifiable. The organization's preliminary investigations, disclosed during a press conference at Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza, also rejected the Israeli army's attempt to attribute the victim's death to a stampede. The Euromeds branch in Gaza said Israeli forces had intentionally opened fire on the crowd of aid and its recipients to intimidate anyone struggling to get a handful of food. At the conference, Euromed researcher Mohamed Karika said that the organization's field team had documented Israeli tanks firing heavily towards Palestinian civilians trying to receive humanitarian aid at the Nablusi roundabout. Kariki highlighted that the Euromed findings demonstrate that dozens of victims suffered gunshot wounds rather than being run over and crushed, in contrast to what the Israeli army had claimed. He further highlighted four pieces of evidence confirming the Israeli army's involvement in killing and wounding starving civilians. The organization also published a report saying that evidence shows that dozens of victims suffered gunshot wounds in the attack. Quote, "This indicates that the danger did not originate from the trucks themselves or from the surrounding crowd of people, but rather from an outside source that terrified everyone in the area, both close and far away from the trucks," the monitor said. The rights organization warned that the Israeli shooting of the starving Palestinian civilians receiving aid has become a regular practice. On Friday, a UN team visited some of the wounded in Gaza City's Al-Shifa Hospital and saw, quote, "a large number of gunshot wounds," UN Chief Antonio Guterres spokesperson Stefan Duharik has said. Israeli regime forces have bombed another aid truck in central Gaza, killing and injuring scores of Palestinians in Deir al-Balah in the besieged Strip. Thousands of starving people were collecting food from the aid truck on Sunday when the Israeli forces attacked. This is the second attack forces in the last 5 days on displaced Palestinians awaiting food aid. The human rights chiefs expressed dismay concerning the brutality with which Israel is leading its ongoing months-long war. Quote, "Many people were killed and others wounded in Israeli bombing that targeted an aid truck in Deir al-Balah in the central Strip," medics who wished to remain anonymous told media.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu. There's no podcast, however. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 5 p.m. to 11 at either 6000, 6060, or 6165. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Standard Time. On to France 24. A press review about Argentinian President Javier Milei that has suspended the largest public news agency, called Telem, for what he calls spreading propaganda for the left. Then a press review on French leaders enshrining abortion rights into their constitution. France 24.
Javier Milei has suspended Telem's state news agency, accusing it of being a propaganda outlet for the left. Dipti is here. It's garnering a lot of attention in the press, this, isn't it, Dipti?
Yeah, that's right, Stuart. It is garnering a lot of press. Javier Milei has called the Telem state news agency, which is actually the largest state news agency in all of Latin America, he's called it a propaganda mouthpiece for previous leftist administrations. It's why the government moved to suspend the news outlet for the next 7 days, meaning staff will be paid for the next 7 days. But beyond that, the idea is to look at eventually halting all its functions or essentially establishing its definitive closure. This is an article from Clarín, a local paper in Argentina, which explains that Telem operated as a news wholesaler with more than 500 wire stories per day and hundreds of photos being published. It also played an important role in distributing the government's official advertising until Javier Milei also put a stop to that. The agency also employed 750 staff, all of whom were prohibited from going to work on Monday because the offices were literally fenced in and the agency's website was also disabled. Officially, President Milei says that the agency was losing money, but he has also said that he's accused it of being a propaganda mouthpiece for previous left-wing administrations. On Twitter, a group set up to support workers denounced the government's measures. In this tweet here, they call it pure dogmatism and persecution against those working for the state agency.
Yeah, it comes, doesn't it, Dipti, after Javier Milei criticised written press journalists for opinion pieces that were published at the weekend?
Yeah, that's right. This is in La Nación, another local paper from Argentina, which calls this a, quote, new chapter in a long series of insults and attacks by Milei to the press. He slammed two journalists from La Nación and Clarín, two of the papers we spoke about, over opinion pieces that were published recently. His attitude towards the media has been slammed by journalist associations, warning that the risks of altering the climate that preserves freedom of expression are enhanced with these increasing attacks on the press.
French leaders are meeting in Versailles today to finalise the enshrining of abortion rights into the constitution, Dipti.
Yeah, that's right, Stuart. My members of French Parliament are indeed gathered in Versailles for this Congress today, this meeting in which they're essentially going to enshrine the French women's right to abortion in the French constitution. The right to abortion is expected to become a constitutional right this Monday. A freedom forever, that's what Libération says on its front page, and a lovely front page this Monday, paying tribute to what it calls an historic victory of the perseverance of MPs from all parties. Today's victory in France is also, according to Libération, a necessary antidote given the return of reactionary and conservative politics around the world, notably in the U.S. when it comes to abortion rights. While L'Humanité, that's a communist paper in France, says the world is watching France today. It says on its front page here, reminding us that 47,000 women die every year around the world due to secretive or clandestine abortions. The paper hails the move today as a world first political and historical act, while warning that at a time when hospital budgets are being slashed, when medical services outside of big cities are increasingly reducing, it's important to continue fighting to ensure now that abortion is also accessible to everyone.
Those reports were from France 24. France 24 may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English, as well as most podcast sites, as is the Shortwave Report. If you have questions or comments about the Shortwave Report or could help support this listener-funded program, PayPal contact information is available at my website, outfarpress.com, or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Your donations help the weekly production and distribution of this show, which is supplied without cost to more than 100 radio stations across the globe. We will conclude with NHK Japan. Citizens in southwest Japan tried to get a nuclear power plant suspended by a court. The Japanese Prime Minister is continuing efforts to export fighter jets to other countries. The Chinese Foreign Minister spoke about U.S.-Chinese relations on the sidelines of the National People's Congress in Beijing. There is a conference in Geneva on restricting the use of lethal autonomous weapons like those being used by Israel and Gaza. The World Health Organization says that 1 in 6 children under the age of 2 in Gaza is seriously malnourished. NHK Japan.
To a legal dispute over a nuclear plant in southwestern Japan. Residents of Oita Prefecture want the plant's operation suspended, but a court has turned their demand down. The case was brought by over 500 residents. The prefecture where they live is separated from the Ikata plant by a small arm of the sea. The plaintiffs say its operator, Shikoku Electric Power Company, has not taken adequate measures against earthquakes and volcanic eruptions. They say the ground could contain problems, including an active fault, but the company has not sufficiently studied the underground structure. The residents are also concerned about the risk of a massive volcanic eruption at Mount Aso. That's about 130 kilometers away. The power company says the risk of that happening while the reactor is running is adequately low. A district court ruled on Thursday Shikoku Electric has conducted a reasonable investigation to ascertain the underground structure. And it said the firm's evaluation of the risk of a huge volcanic eruption is also reasonable. The plaintiffs plan to file an appeal.
The earthquake on the Noto Peninsula is still so fresh in our memories, but this is the outcome. I'm just angry.
The power company says the ruling is appropriate and says it'll make every effort to keep the plant operating safely. This is the first ruling in a series of lawsuits filed by residents in the prefectures of Oita, Ehime, Hiroshima, and Yamaguchi. They all want a stop to the Ikata plant's only operating reactor. Japanese Prime Minister Kishida Fumio says the government and ruling parties will continue working on a framework to enable exports of next-generation fighter jets to third countries. Japan has been developing the aircraft with Britain and Italy. The government and the main ruling Liberal Democratic Party are in favor of easing the country's strict guidelines on arms exports. But the LDP's coalition partner, Komeito, is taking a cautious stance. The head of the main opposition Constitutional Democratic Party is worried Japan's arms export guidelines could be gradually eased further. Izumi Kenta says Japan must avoid having its weapons used to kill people around the world.
Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi spoke about U.S.-China relations at a news conference on the sidelines of the National People's Congress in Beijing. Wang says the U.S. continues to misunderstand China. He urged the U.S. to approach China's development objectively and rationally.
The U.S. becomes nervous and anxious when it hears the word China. Where is its confidence as a major power? The challenges the U.S. is facing are not China, but the U.S. itself. If the U.S. sticks to suppressing China, it will hurt itself as a result.
Wang added that China always aims to strengthen dialogue and communication with the U.S., build a bridge of understanding, and eliminate misunderstandings and prejudice. Wang says China believes the two countries can find ways to work together well. Wang reiterated that Taiwan's independence must also be clearly opposed. He stressed that the One China principle must be maintained.
Our policy is clear. We will continue our efforts to achieve peaceful unification with the utmost sincerity. We will never allow Taiwan to be separated from our homeland.
He says those who support Taiwan's independence in the international community will bear the consequences.
Experts from around the world have gathered in Geneva to discuss restricting the use of lethal autonomous weapons systems, or LAWs. The meeting comes amid mounting concerns over their use in Gaza.
It is up to you, the states, to take preemptive and preventative approach to shield present and future generations from the consequences of the use of autonomous weapon systems.
The artificial intelligence-driven systems are typically able to select and attack targets without a human operator. The technology is described by some as inhumane. A Palestinian Authority representative was among those voicing concern.
An investigation by Israeli Plus 972 magazine and Local Call has revealed that Israel's use of artificial intelligence has been central to the execution of its mass killings in Gaza.
Officials say the parties involved will spend the next 3 years discussing whether to introduce restrictions. Last December, the UN General Assembly adopted a resolution calling for urgent action against autonomous weapons. Russia and three other countries voted against the resolution. China and Israel were among 11 others that abstained.
Meanwhile, the World Health Organization has been reporting on the situation in northern Gaza. It says one in six children under 2 years of age there is seriously malnourished. Videos posted on social media show a baby undergoing treatment on a bed and another in an incubator as an alarm sounds from the medical equipment. The room then goes dark as a power outage hits the facility. The humanitarian crisis in northern Gaza is deepening as prolonged fighting and Israeli checkpoints are blocking efforts to get aid through.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan. On shortwave, they are heard at 9 p.m. at 13735 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. NHK is also available at most podcast sites. All the times I've announced are for Pacific Standard Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You have to look harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find information for making online support. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. This shortwave report, which is now in its 27th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. For 26 years, the shortwave report has been produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. While I'm recuperating from spinal surgery, I am staying in a house that is connected to the grid. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.